Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. Today we're going to be talking All-Stars. We're going to get a dispatch from you and the ridiculous hijinks and shenanigans of that crazy Sixers party that you were telling us about last week. But first, we have to talk about Cavaliers versus Warriors. Part two for this season, part like 19 for their rivalry, quote unquote, which Draymond is now ready to call it. I guess the real big question that everybody really wants to know is, did you make it through all four quarters, or when did you bail for the movie theater on this one?
I mean, full disclosure, I did take some time off to watch The Young Pope last night, and then in the fourth quarter, I watched the fourth quarter, but I was paying more attention to Tony Allen on Periscope. He was playing a ukulele with his son and showing off his new puzzle. So yeah, that's what kind of game it was last night.
Yeah, it was over pretty early too. Like at what point were you like, even the Warriors can't blow this one? Like, I know you probably had that thought. That's the thought that I had after watching them collapse against the Grizzlies the other night and the Cavaliers on Christmas. I was kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then, I don't know, I think it was still before halftime, I was like, look, even Golden State's not going to screw this up.
Yeah, at the half, I was like, all right, so this is it. This is round two. We got it. I mean, what did you see last night that sticks out? Because for me, the most important story was Steph.
Oh, I thought he was the story for sure. I mean, his passing was unbelievable. Just masterful is what I put in my kind of game write-up. Some of the looks that he was hitting were just unbelievable. And the quality of the looks that they were generating in terms of the shots, whether it was dunks, layups, or wide-open three-pointers, was just consistent. And we haven't seen Steph really exert himself in that type of way against the Cavaliers. I don't think since maybe the first finals, like the end of the first finals, where he was just shaking Dellavedova all over the court. I know you've probably bleached that from your memory, but it did happen. but it's been a while since we've seen Steph leave that kind of an imprint against Cleveland.
Yeah, well, for me, it just feels like they are so much better when the team belongs to Steph. And I think he only finished 7 of 20 last night, but he should take 20 shots in every game that they play, because the whole offense gets scarier. And like, there was a moment in the first quarter last night where, I mean, he started the game with a layup, and he was very aggressive early on. And there was a moment in that first quarter where he pulled up from 35 feet, and I knew that like the real Steph Curry was back. He didn't even hit the shot, but that doesn't matter, because when he's taking those shots, that's where the Warriors go from like a very good team to something from outer space. And last night, like, they scored 78 points in the first half.
Oh, for sure. And I think there's so many secondary and tertiary benefits of him being aggressive. I mean, of course, his own scoring ability is going to be there. But also, Klay looks more comfortable, you know, more in rhythm, because they've played together a lot. Draymond looks more comfortable and in rhythm. They tend to get up and down the court. You know, they get to their pace a little bit better when Steph's more involved. And then I also think, like, Kevin Durant's points come a lot more easily when Steph is the one who's kind of the real engine of the offense. I mean, when KD is out there running the break, finishing dunks with authority, you know, put back slam when Steph missed the layup, you know, just filling the lane with that one dunk that really set off the Warriors bench. I mean, that is sort of what I envisioned when KD first signed up, right? It was like just this overwhelming monsoon of talent that there wasn't going to be anything you can do. And we've seen it slow down at times where KD, you know, pounds a little bit too much, kind of gets into that mellow groove, which people, you know, knock him for. And that was just non-existent against Cleveland. I mean, the flow was there completely. And I'm sure Steve Kerr is looking at that box score and just whistling, like, so happy.
Well,
I mean,
so that's kind of my point. That's kind of my point with Durant, is when you run the offense through him and just sort of throw it to him on the wing, and then he'll get a screen, like, he's good enough so that you can win that way. But at that point, they become just sort of a regular basketball team instead of this like monster. And last night they were a lot more of the monster, where like it came a day after watching Aaron Rodgers against the Packers. And like, I'm a Cowboys fan, and having to watch your team try to stop Aaron Rodgers feels like so, so hopeless. And on every play, you're just like, oh my God, like, and you're sort of like just praying for something to go wrong somehow. And obviously it did not end well on Sunday. But that's kind of how it is when you watch teams try to stop the Warriors. It's like anytime they don't score feels like a minor miracle. And that's what we saw again last night. And it's I understand that they have issues at the end, but it still is just so amazing to me that that anyone else has ever been favored to win the title this year.
When I look at that game, though, I do think Cleveland's just effort and focus wasn't there. You know, at end of the road trip, all the excuses you want to throw out there, losing Kevin Love at halftime, not having J.R. Smith, they've kind of been this little swoon.
How funny would it have been to if they had just rested guys last night?
Oh, that would have been awful.
Because it would have been, strategically, it would have been a perfectly understandable move. And it would have been interesting to see, A, the Warriors' reaction, B, like, what does Adam Silver do? This is a showcase game for the league where I think the Cavs had 2 days of rest beforehand. So it would have been, like, tough for them to justify resting them on those grounds. But, like, strategically, you could tell that they were not that engaged last night.
Yeah, I think David Stern would have had to come out of retirement with a fine.
Exactly. But I mean, not Silver's style, but I don't know. Well,
see, I wasn't worried about that because you love the sneaker conspiracies. I mean, these guys are trying to sell their MLK Day colorways, okay?
So they're not going to sit out on the holiday.
But I just didn't think that effort-wise and then in terms of controlling the pace and trying to make things difficult for Golden State that Cleveland was in it. They let them get out in transition too easily. Obviously, stopping that is not the simplest task, but they just weren't up to it. And that's why I thought the game was over pretty early in the first half.
Speaking of transition, give me your take on the LeBron-Draymond thing in the second quarter.
Well, you were trying to talk football, and you said you were a Cowboys fan. Did LeBron look a little like Romo there when he got hit? I mean,
look.
Lying prone on the ground for 10 seconds? I mean, that's who I thought of when I saw it.
I got pretty fired up watching in my living room last night because it was just... It was such a ridiculous flop that it actually made me pissed off all over again about last year's finals and how dramatic LeBron was in the wake of the Game 5 dust-up with Draymond and just how overblown it all got. And I understand that it's smart for LeBron to play it that way and to try to turn Draymond into like a problem for basketball, but the whole thing is just so overblown. And the flop last night was like, you've got to be kidding me. And he got the call. They called it a flagrant, which is just ridiculous.
Okay, so how did you feel about the flail, though? The mocking flail afterwards from Draymond? I mean,
look. So I understand.
Sounds like you're pro-flail to me, honestly. I think you want to let out your pro-flail thoughts here.
No, because I understand people who get annoyed with Draymond Green, but the LeBron flop last night. I mean, LeBron is like the most indestructible player in the NBA. So for him to fall over like that, I don't understand how anyone can take it seriously. And the flop was so ridiculous that it made most of America side with Draymond.
Okay, here's my take on this whole thing. That was one of the most fearless episodes I've ever seen from a basketball player. Imagine being imagine being Draymond. You punch a guy below the belt, and you throw away the greatest season in NBA history because of it. You know, that action gets you suspended. You lose the finals. They lose three straight. You woke up LeBron. He goes nuts. Best three-game stretch in NBA history. You are the GOAT for, like, four straight months, right? You know, basically the next chance you have to go right back at it, to double dip and to hit LeBron again, you do it. And then on top of that, you just basically throw out any caution to the wind and you say, you know what, not only am I going to hit him again to see if he's going to pop back up and, you know, take over again, but I'm going to troll him mercilessly on national television on a holiday when everyone is watching, basically calling into question his manhood again after they already did the this is a man's league, you know, nonsense talk in the middle of the finals. it's like everybody wants to talk about poking the bear. I mean, I heard John Wall say something like that. You know, Damian Lillard had a back and forth with D'Angelo Russell about not poking the bear. I mean, this is like taking the bear's eyes and just like poking each of them over and over and over and over, like 10 times in a row in terms of motivating LeBron, right? Like, what more does LeBron need when he goes into the finals? Watching that play over, watching Draymond's reaction, hearing the Warriors talk about it afterwards. It's like, was this the best idea? I would agree. Was it fearless or foolish? I guess that's kind of my takeaway here, is like, clearly Draymond is not afraid of LeBron or LeBron's response, and he clearly does not care about sort of atoning for the 2016 finals. But
yeah, I would agree with your fearless analysis if I thought Draymond had any sort of self-awareness. And I don't think that he looks at himself as the GOAT from last year. So it's just like not really an issue. I think it's just Draymond being Draymond.
That's so hard to process. Can you imagine that?
I mean, I really don't. I don't think he looks at it that way. The other way you could look at this is LeBron screwing with Draymond. And that makes sense to me. And honestly, like, one of the few real advantages that the Cavs will have in a 7-game series is LeBron's ability to mess with Draymond's head.
That's a great point, because I can see it right now. Like, game one, Oracle Arena, Cavs lose by 25, but LeBron takes a shot from Draymond on a rebound, maybe an elbow to the shoulder. He goes flying across the court, and then the post-game press conference, Ty Lue's up there with a very serious face saying, you know, this is a real pattern of behavior from Draymond.
Yeah,
we've got to protect our stars out there.
We've got to hold guys accountable.
It's like, how many times have we been through this, whether it was last year's finals or back in January? The Kiki Vandeweghe really needs to step in here. You know, I mean, we can see that unfolding before our eyes, can't we?
All I ask is that, because first of all, this is a rivalry. That's another thing that pissed me off with LeBron coming into this game, is how he said, I don't think we have a rival in our game today. We had two great finals appearances, but it's not really a rival. It's like the Spurs. Like, no, this is a rivalry. Let's settle that right there. And like, it's weird to me that LeBron wouldn't embrace that, because it's kind of a cool coda to his legacy, is finishing things off with this rivalry. But then at the same time, all I ask for the finals is that we don't have a suspension, because that will really kind of ruin things for me in with this rubber match.
Okay, I just need to clear up a few things. Number one, I don't think LeBron flopped nearly as badly as you said he did. I think he got hit pretty good. He sold it. Okay, that's what he does. Was it a flagrant? I mean, it didn't necessarily seem like a basketball play. Draymond seemed to be delivering the blow with a little bit of extra oomph, don't you think?
I think Draymond bumped him, and LeBron is LeBron. I don't think anyone in the league could move LeBron if he didn't want to be moved. So, like, you got to be kidding me if you say it wasn't a flop.
I just think he embellished a little bit, that's all.
If LeBron didn't want to be knocked down by that, there's no way he gets knocked down. Can we agree on that?
I think he would have gone to the court one way or the other. I mean, LeBron's smart enough. He knows how to take care of his body. You don't want to be like trying to be on a diagonal when you're getting hit. You know, you just let your body go.
Okay.
But besides from the flop, that was a slump buster the Warriors needed, right? I mean, they kind of needed this win, and they needed it this way, don't you think?
Yeah, and for me, my favorite takeaway from that game is that after everything that's happened over the last year or so, and all the trash that's been talked about Steph and 3-1 jokes and everything else, like, it's still ultimately on Steph Curry to change the balance of this matchup. And he's the guy that can take this from like a really hard fought series to a blowout and make the Warriors unstoppable. And I'm pumped for him, because that's one of the things, like, I just want to see him have the opportunity to sort of silence people. And I think we started to see a little bit of that last night. And June will be another opportunity for him to do that in this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I go to the slump buster thing, because it was really getting right. I mean, we've seen Golden State blow out Cleveland a number of times, games 1 and 2 in the finals. Last January, you know, about a year ago, you go back to the previous finals at the end of that series, there was, you know, some really one-sided play. And I was kind of wondering coming into this game, is like, where is that team? You know, where is that team that has the unreal ceiling that nobody can kind of keep up with? And they finally showed up. Just a few statistical notes. I mean, LeBron's worst plus minus of his career was last
January. I was waiting for the Golliver stats. I'm really pumped that we've hit that point in the podcast.
His worst plus minus ever was minus 34 last year against the Warriors. His second worst plus minus ever was Monday against the Warriors, minus 32. So they can thump him.
Is it time to fire David Blatt?
Well, they should bring it back just to fire him again. I mean, that would be so great.
just to refresh everybody. Any other notes?
No, I think if you're Cleveland, I mean, the message coming from their fans on Twitter, I think was right. It's not really like a panic moment. It's a lot different than last year when they did fire David Blatt and kind of overhauled their roster a little bit at the deadline. Maybe that's too strong of a word, but they started to make moves and look to improve because they didn't feel like they were quite right. They tried to improve their cohesion in the locker room as well. I think they're okay.
What about Korver? Where do you think he fits in this series? Because last night he kind of hurt them more defensively than he helped them on offense.
Yeah, I thought that they picked on him. I mean, the Warriors really went after him. I mean, there was a game last year where they really picked on Kevin Love and just every single play they ran it down his throat. And I think that they were really looking to get ISO'd against Kyle Korver, almost trying to make him look bad, frankly, in some of the cases. I mean, it wasn't a very friendly approach. And, you know, I don't think that Cleveland really ever got its flow offensively. Cleveland's been taking and making tons and tons of threes this year, lots and lots of open shots, pretty good ball movement. I don't think they ever got there. Korver was obviously off early, which didn't help. You know, I think he can play a lot better for them. But yeah, that is an open question in terms of how big is his role going to be against Golden State or any team that can really isolate and attack him defensively, because he's been pretty bad, you know, all season long. And I'm not sure how long you can hide him, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is Iguodala was back to being aggressive last night, which
he heard you call him out, you know.
Exactly. Iguodala is one of our biggest listeners. I mean, look, as far as like big picture, obviously it's a random game in January and the Cavs got their ass kicked last January, so it's hard to read too much into this. But I do think that last night underscores the Warriors as favorites. And there's been a lot of buzz like all season long about how the Cavs should really be the title favorites. And I actually don't know what the Vegas odds have been, but like, I mean, it's the Warriors' title to lose, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think another reason why that game was a slump buster to me was the last time KD beat LeBron, KD was in Oklahoma City, LeBron was in Miami. You know what I mean? So there is this mental thing between the two of those guys. And it's almost like validation for Durant's decision last summer, right? Is the idea of, well, the whole point of teaming up was to be in a better position to take down LeBron and win a title. And I think that game was evidence that if Golden State sticks to their principles, moves the basketball, gets to the pace, they're reasonably hot from outside, and they're locked in defensively, which I thought they were at times, especially Durant, that's enough to beat LeBron. And I think so, Durant's still at the point of his career where he needs to be convinced of that. I mean, he has not had a lot of success against LeBron, and that was the blueprint win right there to take down LeBron.
But as far as validation is concerned, don't you think it's a little bit less satisfying to watch him do it on this team? I mean, obviously that's kind of like the obvious take and the old man hot take, but like as someone who's watched Durant and kind of rooted for him for his entire career, if he's going to beat LeBron, particularly in the playoffs, like it would be much cooler to see him do it on a team where he's the number one option.
I mean, I hear you, and this is going to be my political analogy of the episode. It reminds me, like, you nitpicking KD for if he wins his first title because he teamed up for somebody else's team is sort of like nitpicking Trump for not winning the popular vote. You know, like, a win is a win. You know, like, you play by the rules. All the rings count. He still gets to sit in the Oval Office. KD still gets his ring. I mean, I'm not going to go after KD for that, but I'm not ready to just give it to him yet. I mean, I do think LeBron, I mean, for a guy who you should have realized, you don't mess with this guy. Like, there is actually one bear in the NBA. Everybody's talking about this poking the bear stuff. There is one legitimate bear. That bear is LeBron. I'm sure he is just seething in private about that Draymond antics afterwards. You know, I mean, talk about showing him up. I feel like that was not the best move.
Yeah, no, I still think we'll get a good series in June, because also Kyrie was kind of off last night and has been off for the last few weeks, but I would expect him to show up a lot better in June. So, and yeah, we'll have plenty of time to decide what this means for Durant, and we'll probably be having these arguments for like a solid 2 months in May and June. So we can move on here. The topic of the week, All-Star voting, and you have a special announcement.
I do. I finally got invited to the club after years of begging. You know, I've been on the doorstep, on the red carpet, trying to squeeze my way into the official voting for anything for years. And I finally got the call, Andrew. Finally.
From Vegas Summer League. What is it? You vote for the first team Vegas Summer League?
Oh, yeah. I do a second team as well. And actually, I do a third team, even though they don't ask for it. But no, the only thing I've ever been allowed to vote for was Summer League related. And now I finally got an All-Star starter vote. So I'm part of the group of people who kind of overrides the fan vote for Zaza Pachulia. So my job basically is to correct the most egregious mistakes by the fans, because, you know, the players are going to get to vote, a media panel gets to vote, and the fans obviously get to vote as well. So
it's a big moment. It's a big moment. This is a dream come true. And let me tell you, so when I first found out that you had a vote, you texted me early last week. I was a little bit jealous, but then I sort of stepped back and thought, you know, Ben deserves this. He spent 2 weeks at Summer League over the summer, which is kind of unfathomable. He takes this all very seriously. And if I had a vote, it would probably lead to some sort of like controversy involving Sports Illustrated, like who voted for Otto Porter as an All-Star starter. So like
Zach LaVine over Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, exactly. So I settled like, all right, it's good that Ben got the vote. And then,
look, I'm
2 days
to put
later,
all my people.
I got an email, and I got a vote, too.
Oh!
And it was actually
twist.
Look, it was really hard to keep that secret from you. I wanted to tell you on the podcast, but it's a big victory for the pod in general that we have two All-Star votes.
That is really next level. Well, now they're just letting everybody in, so now this is awful.
Did I ruin it for you?
I was so proud of myself, and now I'm just like, oh, God, Sharp's got it. I wish I could take my vote back. Oh, jeez.
No, my legitimate hope is that this is like a way in for us to have actual awards votes, because I think that would be really cool. This year's starters, there was not a whole lot of drama, but this is just the first step. You know what I mean?
Well, I think you're right. There are a few spots out of the top 10 for the starters that I thought were debatable. And I think that I have a feeling that we're going to have debates here over a couple of these. Do you want to just like go through the ones that we feel are the most obvious to the least obvious? So start with the guys who we don't really need to talk about. So otherwise we're going to be discussing All-Star starters for like an hour and a half. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's streamline this. And we're also going to do reserves too. So
we only actually, just for clarification's sake, on the official ballot, all you do is vote for the starters. So the reserves are selected by the coaches. And you get to pick two backcourts, three front courts for each conference. And that's basically as simple as it is. Let's start in the East with your most obvious pick. I would assume it's LeBron in the front court.
Yeah. Like the two that were easy for me, you can't keep LeBron off, and Giannis, after everything that he's done, has to be in there.
Yeah, I mean, I might quibble and say he was the third most obvious to me behind Kyle Lowry in the backcourt, but it would be very close.
Okay.
Yes. All three of those guys, to me, were completely obvious. Did you have Lowry, too?
So, Lowry...
Already.
No.
Here
look,
we go.
Look, oh, I no. couldn't in good conscience... I think like on four or five different podcasts, I've made a point to ramble on for 30 to 45 seconds about how good Kyle Lowry has been this year and how underappreciated he's been. So I couldn't in good conscience keep him out of the starting lineup.
Oh, thank God. You made my heart skip like three beats in a row there. I was really stressed out.
Because his team is so good. And if it's between Lowry and DeRozan, like I got to choose DeRozan. And by the way, our starters are very similar, but it was really, really tough because Kyle Lowry is also not as fun to have in an All-Star game as some of the other choices at guard. So it was tough for me to throw him in there, but I'll just say like off the top, like the toughest decision I had was those two guard spots in the East, because John Wall and Isaiah Thomas both like definitely deserve it as well.
Yeah, I feel you. That was the second guard spot to me was tricky, but I thought Lowry had to be there basically across the board in terms of the advanced stats, his team's record, his influence on his team's success.
Okay, but hold on.
I thought that made it clear. There was no debate to me between Lowry or DeRozan. So let me just say that very clearly.
Yes, you've made that clear over the last 6 weeks. However, can you at least admit that a backcourt of John Wall and Isaiah Thomas would be like a lot more fun in an All-Star game setting?
You know, I'm not at the All-Star game for fun. You know, I honestly was upset they didn't play defense last year. I wrote a whole column about it. And then guess who came out and co-signed for me last week? Dwayne Wade himself. So I felt very validated by that, even though I took a bunch of crap for like 3 weeks. I think that the All-Star game needs to be more intense. My favorite All-Star game player in recent years has been Russell Westbrook because he goes at it hard and tries to win MVP every single time.
Didn't Dwayne Wade break Kobe Bryant's nose a couple years ago?
I'm not saying we need to have violence, okay? I'm just saying we need to have a little bit more intensity. And I think, you know, somebody needs to answer Westbrook's challenge here. He goes hard. We know he's going to go hard. I need competitors in that game. And I need guys who can play a little defense. And I'm not making my selections, honestly, by who has the best role in the All-Star game. I'm making on who's the most deserving. And I think Lowry is clearly the most deserving.
Yeah. All right. So then I agree with you, just to be clear. Big picture, Lowry deserves some love after the last 2.5 months.
Yeah. My next most obvious was Jimmy Butler. And I'm going to kind of turn into a parody of myself and say that this was actually a pretty tough call because I really wanted to have Millsap in there. But
oh my God, come on.
I went Butler over Millsap. And the basic reasoning there was impact. I mean, the Bulls, when Butler is not on the court, are just an absolute disaster. He's had a really nice stretch here coming into the All-Star break with some big shots. I don't know if you saw the other night. He basically iced a game away by diving onto an inbounds pass and calling timeout before he slid out of bounds in one of the all-time, like, just most Jimmy Butler plays. So you look at, you know, both offense and defense, and you look at the other guys who are sort of wings in that category, who's really done it on both sides this year. To me, it's Giannis and Jimmy in terms of, you know, two-way effort, and then a fairly big fall off. I mean, I think he's been a lot better than Paul George. Certainly DeMar is not in that conversation, so
disrespect really needs to stop. All right, look, DeMar DeRozan, I didn't vote for him over Jimmy Butler, but that was the debate, DeMar versus Jimmy, and DeRozan's team is so much better, and Jimmy Butler,
DeMar's a backcourt, though. I mean, that's the thing, is it wasn't quite that debate, right? Because you're comparing DeMar against the other point guards was sort of the situation I got in.
Oh, he wasn't front court eligible?
Yeah, he wasn't front court. At least that's not what I saw. I saw him in the backcourt.
And
what you were talking about with guys like Isaiah Thomas and John Wall, that's where I got stuck because now I'm comparing them against DeMar. And, you know, my fifth starting spot pick was John Wall. Because, you know, like you were mentioning, I mean, he's right there in the conversation with, you know, kind of right behind Kyle Lowry in terms of being deserving and entertaining and so forth. And I thought, you look at the breadth of his work in terms of being the number one guy on his team. The record's been more respectable lately. Again, two-way impact. I think he's a better defensive player than a guy like DeRozan. Certainly better defensive player than, you know, Kemba Walker or Isaiah Thomas, some of these other guys that were mentioning, Kyrie Irving. You couple that with both his own scoring and his playmaking for others, and I think John Wall was my second pick in the starting backcourt for the East.
Yeah.
And also, that was the trickiest one for me, but I still felt pretty comfortable about it. I guess that left Isaiah as the biggest snub?
It was really tricky for me as someone who watches Wall every night. Like, he is so, so, so good. And, I mean, the Wizards would be, like, probably 10 games below 500 without him, and he's really cranked it up a level this past like 6 weeks as well. But at the same time, Isaiah Thomas is every bit as good and every bit as important to the Celtics, and some of the stuff that he's been doing in fourth quarters, like, he is kind of their only option, and it works because he's just that good. And I don't know how you choose between those two. You know what I mean? Like, you mentioned defense. Like, Wall's defense is not great. And that's sort of one of the weaknesses that is still kind of an issue. And another it's
a lot better than Isaiah's, though. I mean, he's not a glaring, like, pick on this guy at every chance type of situation.
Yeah, well, only I would say yes. I would also say that, like, physically, he has the tools to be one of the best point guard defenders in the league, but he just does not do that on a night-to-night basis. Like, that doesn't happen. And there are a lot of games where he will be kind of out of it defensively and allow other point guards to get hot, and that really works against the Wizards, which is, again, like, that's that, it's not taking away from one of the best players in the league, but, like, I wouldn't, like, give him an advantage in the defense category.
You got to give him an advantage over Isaiah in the defensive category. There's no question. I mean, I don't think it's close.
I'm just telling you, as someone who watches every game that
Wall
plays.
I'm not saying that he's a defensive player of the year, but I think that you're giving Isaiah too much of a pass for how damaging his defense can be. And you look at their team defense this year for Boston. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest disappointments around the league. And maybe they'll get it together. Maybe they start slow because of Horford and Crowder and their schedule and so forth. But their defense, I thought, was going to be way, way up there. And I think it's one of those trade-offs where they need his offense late so badly, like you mentioned, that they have to suffer through his defensive anchoring, you know, pulling them back to earth a little bit. And I just think that limits Isaiah's overall impact. Even though he's been phenomenal, I think, you know, if you give Wall equivalent amount of talent, I think that team's going to be better.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what it came down to, like, resume-wise, they are so... You can't choose one or the other.
So when Isaiah's on the court, Boston's defensive rating is 110. When he's off the court, it's 98, right? So that's like swinging between one of the worst defenses in the league and one of the best. And so that's not all about him. That's also about some of their other defensive pieces that they have in their backcourt. But that is a really bad defense to overcome when he's on the court. And he's clearly the weakest link among those players individually from a defensive standpoint. Wall is just not that guy. He actually makes Washington's defense better when he's on the court. It might not be fantastic. It might not be as consistent of an effort as you would hope for, but you just can't really pick on John Wall defensively.
Yeah. The counterpoint with Isaiah would be, I don't know how you watch him come up huge night after night for these guys and talk about defense. That seems to sort of like miss the point for me.
Well, I mean, again, if their defense is better, he doesn't have to do all of that, right? I mean, I think that's sort of the situation.
All right, that's fine. And look, I had it as a tie, and the equalizer for me was, number one, I could not live with myself if I didn't vote Wall in a tie situation. And then at the same time, I do think that Wall is just the better player. And if you put him on the Celtics would be a better team. So Wall is the starter.
Hold on a second. So we just debated all these picks for like 15 minutes, but we had all the same picks for the Eastern Conference: Lowry, Wall, LeBron, Giannis, and Jimmy.
Yeah, man. It's a podcast.
Oh, Jesus.
Right?
Oh, man.
We got plenty of time to just talk things through.
I was digging in deep to defensive rating on-off splits, but we had the same answers. That's ridiculous. Okay.
Yeah. No, look, we have one difference on the West, and I've decided Jimmy versus DeRozan beforehand, and I actually didn't search to see whether DeRozan was a front court player, but, like, beyond that, I think Butler has to get in over anyone else in the front court. So the East is pretty set, depending on where you stand on Isaiah versus Wall. I do think it'll be really interesting to see who the players choose in that question. And then the players might go with DeRozan, too.
Well, here's what I hope. I hope that the players freak out on the player vote, just like they freak out on me every time I do a player rating. I want to see guys saying, I get disrespected by my colleagues. Where's the love? I've been killing all of you guys for months. That's what I want to see.
That's a great point.
That is what I'm hoping for.
I can't wait. All right, so who do you have in the West? Just read your team.
Backcourt, Harden and Westbrook. I'll admit that I have listened to other people make arguments for different guys and been compelled to hear the pro CP3 argument, to hear the pro Curry argument. But to me, that is a little bit too much overthinking. Both their teams' records were enough, and obviously their crazy central role in terms of usage rate and points created was enough to keep me with, I think, what's considered chalk here, and Westbrook and Harden. And to me, Harden's the MVP front runner, Westbrook's right behind him. So I just kind of penciled those two guys in without too much extra thought, although I did try to weigh these other arguments.
Yeah. For me, it was kind of like I had to take Westbrook and Harden, and it would be too much of a well, actually, to say Chris Paul over Westbrook. And same with Steph, although I still would want Chris Paul or Steph on my team over Westbrook. But after the last 2.5 months, you got to choose Russ.
Yeah, and then in the front court, I mean, I just actually went with the Jazz. So I have Hayward, Favors, and Gobert. No. I think I went, again, fairly obvious on two of the three, Durant and Kawhi. I think that those guys both have to be there. The third spot, I think you can really argue for a lot of different guys depending on your flavor. You could go Marcus Gasol. You can go Cousins. You can go Davis. I think you
can I
even
throw a curveball?
Okay, go for it.
The guy who I wanted to vote for that I didn't have the guts to pick, because this is like the first ballot. I don't want to screw things up. Don't want to cause a controversy for us. You know, I'm looking out for Open Floor's reputation here. But I definitely wanted to take Rudy Gobert as the center.
Oh, my gosh. You're trying to outflank me on the All-Golliver team. I was just going to mention him as another legitimate possibility. This is like my proudest moment, Andrew. This is great.
That dude is
up.
Amazing. Okay. I think it was during the fourth quarter of Warriors Cavs. I switched over to Jazz Suns, and he blocked Dragan Bender on a 3-point shot, which almost never happens. But that's just kind of the way he plays defense, is he can block literally anything. And he has a double double in every single game. He's the defensive player of the year. Like, it wouldn't have been that crazy, but at the same time, I didn't want to be that guy who's just like out there on an island.
Yeah, I didn't consider it that much, but I'm really impressed that you did. I honestly am proud right now. Like, you should see me smiling. You can probably hear it through the microphone. This is great.
I honestly kind of agonized over it, and then at the same time, I was worried that somehow it would become like a public thing, and I didn't want to deal with that at the end of this week. At the same time as like the Trump inauguration, and like it was just sort of like, we'll save that controversy for another day. But that dude, Rudy Gobert, is the best center in the West.
So who did you wind up picking, if not him? Who'd you go with?
I took Anthony Davis because
I went Draymond, so we do have a disagreement. Congratulations to us. So we were 9 for 10 the same, but you went Davis, I went Green.
Yeah, and I think Anthony Davis is not quite as good as his numbers suggest, but his numbers are really tough to ignore. And in the same way that Draymond is better than his numbers suggest, but I think it's an all-star game, and it's in New Orleans, and everything else between those two is pretty much equal, so I went with Brow.
Yeah, I mean, they're just two totally different type of guys. You can almost not compare them. I mean, it really is apples to oranges. I wound up going with Draymond on the strength of his overall impact. I mean, that was sort of the deciding factor to me. You look at Golden State's record, I mean, I think it's certainly deserving of having two starters. I mean, people are kind of sleeping on them. I mean, they're on a 70-win pace. You look at their point differential. This year, it's been better than either one of the last two seasons. Their record's not that far off from last year's record-setting campaign. So that was something that I looked at. And then who is the most fundamental to Golden State's success? I think if you take Draymond off, that could be a team that really loses its way quickly. You know, I mean, yeah. It definitely would have a good offense, but they'd be playing a lot of like 140 to 138 shootouts. And then also, he had to take on this facilitator role. Like, he had to take a step back to make this thing work, right? To have enough shots for Clay, to have the balance with Steph and Durant work. And I think he did that. And he just did that naturally. It wasn't like he made a big deal about it. He understood what his proper basketball role should be, and he nailed it. And then defensively, he's been a monster as well. Tons of effort plays against Cleveland that we saw, but that's been a consistent thing for him. Basically all season long. So that's why I went Draymond, but I will not begrudge you, even though I want to in general, or anyone else who made a case for Anthony Davis. I don't think Cousins or Gobert quite sneaks in. I think my next pick I would have gone with would have been Gasol in Memphis.
Of course. Yeah. I know your love affair with Marcus Gasol is well documented, and I totally get all the Draymond points, and I think if this were an all NBA thing, I would vote Draymond. I did think about, like, if you switched Anthony Davis and Draymond, I think both teams would be worse. because I don't think Draymond would be explosive enough to really change the Pelicans the way Anthony Davis has. And I don't think Anthony Davis is psychotic enough to like keep the Warriors on track the way Draymond has. So I don't know. I think in an all-star setting, Anthony Davis will be more fun and is fantastic and deserves the national spotlight. I have to be honest, I did think like Draymond by Sunday in New Orleans is going to be super hungover, so he will be fine coming off the bench.
Okay, a couple more things to consider. I mean, if you do start Davis, he's the hometown guy, right? Like, so he gets to have the whole, that pomp and circumstance. But if you start Draymond, you get basically the minutes lined up between LeBron and Draymond. Isn't that what you really want in this All-Star game? Like, isn't that our best chance for something to really pop off, is like Draymond leveling LeBron on a fast break, not giving up a free dunk, and all of a
sudden we have the first
All-Star game brawl, you know?
Yeah, you're selling me. I also like Draymond as America's heel starting the All-Star game. So it's a close call. Let's go through the reserves real quick, though, and then we can finish up with some Wizards.
Okay, my reserve backcourt picks. I think I told you a while ago I was going to load up on point guards, and I definitely did that. So my backcourt, Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving, and then I used my wild card spot to add Kemba Walker. So that got me all five point guards that I wanted.
Okay.
And then in the front court, obviously, I picked Millsap. I picked Kevin Love. I thought those guys were no-brainers. That's basically 10 out of the 12. And, you know, I thought really only the last couple of spots were debatable. I put Paul George in there, not having his greatest year. But when you look at him compared to some of the other candidates, whether it's a Melo or a Porzingis, I thought he still had the edge. And my last spot, I hate to say it.
Bradley Beal?
No, he earned it, DeMar DeRozan. My 12th All-Star is DeMar DeRozan. He snuck in right under the gun. And I'm kind of being facetious. He deserves to be there too, but the only way I could kind of make it work with the balance was to have Kemba and DeMar as my two wild cards. So that really loaded up heavily on the backcourt. I think I've got 5 point guards and a two guard, but it works.
Did you give Embiid any consideration?
I did, but I don't think minutes-wise he's played enough to be in that conversation. I tend to look at health as a major tiebreaker on these. I mean, it's one reason why, you know, spoiler alert, I didn't pick Damian Lillard. I think, you know, it's really for this, I mean, it's a little bit different for all NBA because you have a bigger body of work, but when we're only talking about like 50 games here, if you miss 5 games or, you know, if you're not playing full starter minutes, you kind of don't get even really considered. So I did look at him, but I didn't, you know, wind up taking him very seriously, even though he's been phenomenal. And by the way, that's probably the number one thing I've been wrong on this entire year, was how quickly Embiid would get up to speed and be an impact guy. He's been phenomenal. And, you know, I was pretty skeptical. You know, I was kind of scared from the Oden experience, still kind of PTSD from that.
Yeah.
But he's certainly overachieved there.
Yeah, I was at a game yesterday, and someone from a different NBA team said that the Sixers were the most likely non-Cavs Warriors team to win a title next, which is insane to me. But, I mean, when you look at how Embiid has changed the game on a nightly basis for them, like, he's got a real case. Particularly, like, defensively, he's awesome. Offensively, he does everything. And again, like, I just can't get over how big he is, because to be that size and have the skills that he does, like, it's crazy. I wanted to pick him, but ultimately chose Millsap over him, and I feel bad about it.
This is, I feel like I've honestly like changed your life a little bit here.
I don't know. I'm feeling, you know what? Good. Screw it. This isn't an official vote, so Embiid is on my squad. I'm not siding with you. And the other, look, the other guy,
700, but he's only played 700 minutes. I mean, that's tough, you know.
He's only played 700 minutes, but the Sixers, he's changed the entire Sixers organization.
Let's slow this down. He's in the process of changing the entire Sixers organization.
Right, but look, the Sixers have won. Is it 7 of 8 games or something? Like, that's insane.
It is insane, but guess what? The Hawks have won a lot more than that, and we have to give Millsap his credit for that role. The Hawks are 24-17. Millsap's played almost twice as many minutes. He's satisfied my fetish by averaging at least one steal and at least one block. all season long. He's been among the very best impact guys when you look at overall real plus minus. He's been really strong.
Yeah, okay. My eyes were rolling throughout that entire thing, but you're technically probably correct that he deserves it. The other one I would say definitely deserves to be there but won't is Bradley Beal. Beal has been awesome and has been, and I wrote about this like last week, and some Wizards fans were kind of like, it feels weird to write about someone other than John Wall, as good as Wall has been this year. But like, I think the difference is that having Beal playing like an all-star allows Wall to sort of pick his spots more and pace himself a little bit better. And it allows like the rest of the country to appreciate Wall's game more because he actually has help now. And I think it's just, he is the biggest X factor for the Wizards on a nightly basis. And I've been blown away as someone who is like pretty pessimistic about Beal 2 weeks into the season. Like, he has been awesome. So I think he deserves to make the All-Star game and probably won't, but he's in my mix.
But you took DeRozan over him, correct, at that spot, that two-guard spot?
Yeah, DeRozan's in the mix. I picked all five of the same point guards that you did and had DeRozan and Beal, Paul George, and Millsap. And yeah, so I had DeRozan as a member of the front court. I don't know whether that's allowed or not, but like, he plays small forward for them all the time. So I think it should be allowed. But no, in the West,
I'm with you. That's fair. So we really only had one difference, though. You took Beal, I took Paul George. But like, real quick on the snubs, we did not pick Jabari. We did not even discuss Andre Drummond. You didn't even give Carmelo a look. No. Porzingis and Embiid, the youngsters, didn't sneak in here. The Porzingis timing of his recent injuries definitely didn't help his case. I thought he could make a late push. Didn't quite happen. And then your favorite player, Dwight Howard, you're not considering him?
No, although Dwight's been pretty good all year. I mean, he deserves some love for that, but not like all-star love. And Kristaps, yeah, like if we had done this a month ago, I think he would have to be in the mix, but his game has kind of tailed off and he's had some injuries, like you said. I wonder what it would be like in a month from now. Joel Embiid could be a lock.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I'll say is my biggest Barkley tendency is to kind of be skeptical of the young guys and really make them earn it. Like, if it's 50-50, I'll default to the vets. Like with Giannis this year, I mean, he really obviously earned it. Like, everybody realizes he needs to be a starter. I mean, his vote totals are insane.
Yeah.
With Embiid and Porzingis, it's like, look, if you're on the borderline there, you know, like, you got to do something extra special to kind of get over the hump. And to me, they just haven't quite done that. And you raise a good point. If this was, you know, 2 weeks from now, could Embiid have enough of a push here where their record looks better, where he continues to dominate as he has been, where he looks like this big time snub? That's a fair question. And the good news for him is he could be number one in line for an injury replacement, right? Like, if the coaches feel the same way that we do, they reward all the vets and then somebody can't go. I mean, that could be a Joel Embiid, you know, Adam Silver makes the call and just drops him out of that roster, right?
Totally. I'm fine with that. And I also kind of agree with you. Like, big picture, Bradley Beal and Jabari Parker are probably staying home, and that's all good. Like, especially with an all-star game where it's for the fans, like, taking some of the more established guys is fine with me. That means Paul George goes, and Paul George is still awesome. We should probably have a separate pod about Paul George, because I feel like there are enough people now calling him overrated that he's kind of becoming underrated again. And so the Pacers are like hanging in there despite looking like they're about to fall apart at five different times this season. They're hanging in. So Paul George is cool with me. West, let's run through it. I've got Steph and Chris Paul, obviously. Draymond or Anthony Davis, depending on who starts, is another obvious one. And then beyond that, it gets kind of dicey because you're choosing between, there are three or four really deserving big men between Gobert, Gasol, DeMarcus Cousins, who like I would kind of be fine leaving off, but then I also really like DeAndre Jordan, and I think somehow he gets left off the All-Star team every year, and it's kind of bullshit. And then Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, so I picked the roster that's probably going to be the least entertaining, honestly, because I just loaded it with centers, which is probably not great. But I went Paul and Curry in the backcourt. My reserve front court guys were Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, and Rudy Gobert. My wild cards then were Marc Gasol. So that basically gives me like four centers, depending on how you classify Davis. And then my last spot was the tricky one. And I was deciding between Hayward, Damian Lillard, maybe a LaMarcus Aldridge tribute vote for San Antonio's success. DeAndre was definitely in my mix as well. Karl Anthony Towns, I gave him a look. But ultimately, I went with the fourth Warrior, and I went with Clay as my last West All-Star.
I like adding Clay to the All-Star game, and he's good enough to be there. The one thing that was interesting is it really is, when you go when you like take a deep dive into this stuff, all of the great big men are in the West, and all of the great point guards are in the East. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's weird, and so that's going to make for a strange game, I think. You know, one thing to consider though, like when you're weighing like a guy like DeAndre Jordan or even LaMarcus Aldridge, is like, how good is he at his position, right? Because if Klay Thompson is what we're going to consider, you know, basically the best two guard in the West, right? I mean, he's the only guy at that position who we're really even considering if you consider Harden a point guard.
Yeah.
Do you take like the fifth best center in DeAndre Jordan, or do you take the best two guard? I mean, that has to come into it a little bit, I think.
I think you're right. I just kind of look at guys who have been underappreciated, and I think like when you look at the Clippers kind of hanging in there through the Blake injury, like Chris Paul obviously gets a ton of credit, but DeAndre on a nightly basis is so good.
DeAndre is awesome, and if he was in the Eastern Conference, I would have had him for sure, because I think he would be the best center in the East by a pretty good margin.
Yeah,
but I think a lot of the Clippers like hanging tough though goes to CP. I mean, that's why I said he, like, you have a case for him as a starter. I mean, it's probably not going to be a strong case given how good Westbrook and Harden have been and how overwhelming it is to kind of make arguments. But if you want to say his defense is better than those guys, if you want to say that, you know, his on off numbers look better than theirs do, I mean, you can kind of put that case together.
Yeah. Well, and one other point is, as I said, all the point guards are in the East, but looking at it now, like the four best point guards in the league are actually still in the West, with Steph, Chris Paul, Russ, and Harden. So the West still has a serious, serious advantage in this game, but it is interesting how many good big men there are to sort of sort through out West as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you're ranking the top 10 players in the league, you know, how many guys from the Eastern Conference are there really? I think you'd say LeBron for sure. And then past that, you get some question marks. You know, maybe Lowry sneaks in. Maybe Giannis is ready to knock on that door. But then I would say basically the rest of the top 10 would all be in the West, which
yeah, I'm just glad that Giannis is in the East now so that we can finally have like another real franchise player in the East, because it's kind of amazing how long the East went with just LeBron holding things down out there.
Do we have any differences? We both had Paul, we both had Curry, we both had Davis, we both had Gobert, right?
Yes, we both had Gobert. I'm just amazed that we stretched this to 25 minutes of just like hardcore nerdery. Didn't really disagree on anything. This all makes for a great podcast. So thank you for anybody who stuck with us. Should we finish out with some whiz talk?
Yeah, but before that, who's going to be the angriest that they got left off? Like, who's the maddest snub this year? Who do you think?
You know, maybe Damian Lillard, but like, as bad as the Blazers are, I don't think he has like a leg to stand on there, and he missed some time. And, you know, like, also Damian Lillard is a lot more fun when he's pissed off, so that'll be great. And as far as the East, like, I'm not sure. I think Paul George, if he were left off, would have a pretty legitimate beef with everybody. But as it stands now, like, Jabari and Beal are young enough so that I don't think that they will be too resentful.
Yeah, I have one name in mind, and it's Carmelo. If he somehow doesn't make it, like, if he doesn't make it through the fan voting process, so he's not a starter, and the coaches are like, yeah, we're not going to reward New York's just train wreck of a season, and they leave him off, which I think that's a real question, because his star power in terms of just name recognition, it would be weird if like Dwayne Wade gets voted in as a starter, LeBron, Chris, all of his buddies are there, and Melo's the only one who gets left home.
Yeah.
If he's the only one who's off, I think we're going to hear about that one way or another. I don't know if it's going to be like a very difficult to decipher Instagram post. I don't know if it's going to be a salty post-game interview. I don't know if it's going to be a leaked report, but I feel like that is the kind of situation where we have to kind of monitor and see who's really going to be angry. I think it'd be Melo.
Okay, on the one hand, that's a great point, and I should have thought of Melo. On the other hand, I do think that Melo probably has other things that are more upsetting to him right now, so that it's hard to even care about the All-Star game because like his whole life is upsetting, and that's just sort of the baseline for his season. So I think we're just dealing with a couple months of blue Melo here, and that's just the way it is.
What we really need is Charlie Rosen to write his All-Star picks column and snub Melo. If we can get that, that'll put him over the edge.
Charlie Rosen, again, for anyone who's still with us, Charlie Rosen is the original hot taker, and everybody should go out and search Charlie Rosen LeBron James, because that dude was shorting LeBron stock like a month into his rookie season, and it's amazing to read 15 years later.
No, I feel you. Another guy I think that people will get angry on his behalf is Hayward. I just look at his injury, and to me, it's too tough in the Western Conference if you miss time. Even if it's not that much time to kind of put him on, I could see Jazz fans just losing their minds if Rudy makes it and Hayward doesn't. But when I was going through this, I mean, the only imbalance you have is that I took four Warriors and, you know, I didn't take two players from any other team. I think the Spurs fans would have a right to be mad about that, given how good their record is. Jazz fans could probably make a case they should have two. Clippers fans might think DeAndre's in. But I think the way that it balanced out, you know, health-wise, guys like Lillard and Hayward both had to be off.
Yeah, I didn't take Love from the Cavs. And I did take Gordon Hayward, but if it's between Gordon Hayward and Rudy Gobert, I would take Gobert.
Yeah, I think you have to take Gobert over Hayward, no doubt. Okay, let's close this out, though. You said you were going to give us an update on this bust the process, rights to Ricky Sanchez, Sixers fans swarm D.C. night, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say it was a terrific event. I wasn't cursed out when I visited the rights to Ricky Sanchez party. And
did anybody have the shirts? Was that a thing?
Yes, there were 300 shirts printed.
My God. There were 300 people wearing shirts that said F you?
So they actually weren't, because the Wizards reached out in advance and said, you guys are not allowed to wear that shirt in our building. And
oh, my God.
It was pretty funny.
So you called in a favor to Uncle Ted? You called in a favor to Uncle Ted to protect you. Are you serious? How soft are you, man?
It was pretty amazing, because like a day before, on Friday beforehand, the game was on Saturday, someone from the team hit me up and was like, do you know about this party that's happening Saturday night? And like, I guess you're sort of involved somehow. They're all wearing shirts that say your name on them. And like, I didn't even really know. It's just such a hard joke to explain to someone. I was just like, yeah, like, I approved it. I'm okay with it. And they were all pretty funny about it. And although at the game, apparently a lot of Wizards people were upset, including Ted Leonsis, according to one report. Although like the guy, Spike Eskin, who ran it and hosts Rights to Ricky Sanchez, said that the Wizards had initially reached out to him. So it was all pretty confusing, but it was a hilarious night to be there, because the process trusters were so much louder than most of the Wizards fans, and all of the Wizards fans I was sitting with were really confused by what was happening. And it was just a great January basketball game.
Yeah, so I just wanted to clarify. So we had like 300 Sixers fans took a bus from Philadelphia to Washington, and they called it Bust the Process.
Yeah.
But the process had to sit out because it was a back-to-back, so he didn't even play.
He did not play. And okay. I was also sitting there in the first half, and the Wizards started out like as slow and as lazy as you can imagine. And it was like Marcin Gortat got in foul trouble, and Andrew Nicholson was playing. And it was Ilyasova was like bombing threes, and Okafor was going one-on-one. And so basically, the Sixers were up double digits the entire first half, and I was sitting there like, oh my God, they cannot lose this game. I don't want to deal with all the trash talk that I'm going to have to get from Sixers fans if they lose, if they blow this game without Embiid playing. And thankfully, the Wizards got their shit together in the second half.
Yeah, they blew out Philadelphia, right? I mean, it wasn't really that close, right? Okay, and then on top of that, let me just get this part straight. So Jahlil Okafor's dad threatened to beat up one of the Sixers bloggers because he made a joke about how bad Jahlil Okafor is. That also happened?
The two other things that happened were, number one, a friend of mine, an internet friend of mine, Seamus Clancy, joked on Twitter and said, imagine taking a bus for 2.5 hours just to have to watch Jahlil Okafor play basketball. And then Jahlil's dad was like, imagine me whooping your ass or something like that. And I think I saw Okafor's dad at the game. I can't confirm that, but I'm pretty sure he was there. And so I'm glad he was in the mix for all the process trusting on Saturday night. And then the other thing that was cool is, after the game, I had already left, but after the game, all the Sixers guys went down to the court, which is like 400 people on the Wizards floor, and Embiid stuck around before going back to Philly and took a picture with them, which is pretty awesome.
Oh my God. What a night. I'm kind of blown away. I don't know if that sounds like the absolute worst party ever or the best party ever. I mean, certainly one of the nerdiest basketball parties.
It's unquestionably the weirdest subculture in the NBA, and I'm just glad that every few months they managed to sort of push it a little bit further, and including that trip, including Embiid embracing it is an awesome little wrinkle, almost as cool as Embiid becoming like the best young player in the NBA. So it's pretty wild how far this has all come. And the thing I actually wanted to talk about, though, is how awful the Blazers looked yesterday.
Really?
Like, that was just as amazing as anything that happened Saturday night, was how bad the Blazers are on defense, which I went to the Wizards game at, like, it was a 2:00 game, had no expectations. I honestly kind of expected the Blazers to come out and win. And, like, the Wizards scored 75 points in the first half, which maybe the Warriors are going to normalize scoring like that. But like for the Wizards, it's almost impossible for them to score like that. But I think every player on the team got a layup against the Blazers defense.
I mean, this is just amazing. I really feel like I'm talking to myself right now. You've praised Paul Millsap. You almost had Rudy Gobert as a starter, and now you're crushing Portland's defense. I mean, this is just fantastic. Do you kind of see, though, what I was talking about with why you don't trade the farm for a guy like CJ McCollum? I mean, you're going to have nights like that if he's your main guy.
No. I do. What I see is that team, as currently constructed, has like a super low ceiling. I still am,
they're
am
broken,
real
high. Huh? I mean, just broken.
Yeah. Like, do you watch every Blazers game?
No, not every one, but I watch a good number, yeah.
I just don't know. I don't know how they can be that bad. At one point, Terry Stotts subbed out everyone on the floor in disgust. I think it was midway through the third quarter, and I guess that was waving the white flag. So we got a lot of Jake Layman yesterday. Got a little bit of Pat Connaughton too, but it was bad, man. Like I don't have like much to say beyond like they need to do something. They need to make a move just to see what can happen.
I mean, the pressure is definitely on, and it just continues to ramp up because they keep thinking they turn the corner, quote unquote, and then they just go out there and lay an egg like that. And I mean, that's, you know, when Neil O'Shea came out in ESPN.com thing and said that Stotts' job, you know, isn't in jeopardy. And I just don't think you can play defense like they played against Washington for 2.5 more months and not have a major shakeup. And if his hands are tied with the trades because he doesn't have a ton of assets, I understand that. I mean, it's something, you know, at some point, something has to give here, whether it's front office turnover, whether it's coaching turnover, whether it's a roster change. I mean, you just can't have that kind of, because it was embarrassing. I mean, 75 points.
Yeah, that's my thing. It's like, it's so embarrassing that you wonder when like a guy like Lillard or McCollum or Stotts is just going to snap and like kind of go crazy.
Well, and that's the problem is they can't. I mean, you look at Lillard and McCollum, those guys don't guard. They can't flip out on everybody because they don't stop anyone. They're a huge part of the problem. And so you can't have these big locker room speeches from the guys who are putting their big men in, you know, compromising positions constantly defensively. So it gets to be a little tricky. But the last thing I wanted to say, though, and we've been getting a lot of positive feedback from our listeners. We get awesome mailbag questions and lots of nice notes from people. If you want to give us the gift that you know, we really desire, you know, as guys who have it all and you know we're very hard to buy presents for.
I'm pretty afraid of what you're about to say.
Well, it's a 5-star review on iTunes. I mean, right? Like we're the guys who, you know, like we have everything. Like we don't need an extra pair of socks or whatever. I mean, we're hooked up from our sponsors. We've got all the gear. Just hook us up with a 5-star iTunes review, right?
Yes. Give us a review. Send some mailbag questions. We will be back on Friday. We've got a lot of good questions already. So hit us up. And yeah, man, this has been good. Shout out to the Blazers. Shout out to the Process Trusters.
Don't worry, guys. We'll argue more on Friday. I know this was kind of a boring podcast because we agreed on everything because, you know, it's kind of a consensus as to who should be the All-Stars this year. But yeah, we'll be back with some more wedge issues and Senate confirmation hearings with our mailbag on Friday. So check out, look for that.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Peace.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.